Justin, what do you know about software as a service? What do you know about it?
Main thing is that it's a very big industry that continues to grow each and every year. I remember when it first came out, how brilliant it was, because like it used to be that you buy like Microsoft Word or the Microsoft Office platform and then you'd own it forever. But then they came out with software as a service, and it was like the way I looked at it was like, oh, okay, this is like dollars and cents. Now they can charge a renewal fee every single year. It's like I grew up playing like video games and like Madden football, and they come up with a new edition every year. Well, now software as a service kind of provides that option where it's everything is now cloud-based, and there's good and bad about the cloud is that you get real-time updates. So everything gets updated in real time, but there's also real-time subscription costs, which great for business and good because you get the updates, but this will be a good conversation.
Yeah, because in my case, I used to BitTorrent the Adobe Creative Suite every year when they had,
because it's like... Oh, don't tell
them that. Yeah, but you know what? Now I pay the service fee because you know what, it's worth it. But let me ask you this: if you had this is a two part question, if you were to demo your software as a service, how would you do that? How would you actually create a demo for that piece of software?
Well, outside of manually doing it, I think I'm kind of stumped on that one.
Oh well, you know what? We're gonna answer all of these questions and a lot more. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Marketing Geeks.
Marketing Geeks.
Yeah, and here we are. We're going to get right into it. But first, we have to pay some bills. We'll be right back. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I am so happy again to be here. We have a guest tonight, Greg Dickinson. Greg Dickinson is the CEO of a company called Omidim. And it's actually a really great name, and I'll explain why in a second. But Greg Dickinson is a serial entrepreneur and founder of software as a service company, Odium. And he started his career in software working as a pre-sales engineer. And then some stuff happened and some more stuff happened. And we're going to find out about all of that. Next thing you know, the guy is like owning a software as a service company, doing demos for the industry. And I'm curious about all of this. Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Dickinson.
Hey, thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it. It's
going to
be a great conversation.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for showing up. So first of all, tell us about, am I pronouncing the company right? Omidim?
Is that close. Right? Omidim.
Okay. Omidim. And yeah. And when I saw that, I'm like, that's an unusual name, until I actually read where you got the name from. So what does that name mean?
It's my demo spelled backwards. And so we're all about, you know, automating that demo process to help your buyers buy. And you know, as you know, when you start a business today, one of the hardest things is to find a name that's not already taken from a URL perspective. So
yeah,
it was, but that was a lot of thinking on my part. It had a lot of help, but that's where it came from. My demo spelled backwards, and that's Omidim. So you gotta bring it down to the fifth grade level to talk to me.
Brilliant. So give us a little bit about first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and up to the point where you came up with the concept. Like, what were you doing and how did you come up with this concept?
Yeah. So thanks. So you know, you guys are marketing geeks. And so I'm a technology geek. So I was always been interested in computer science. At one time I was a developer. I dating back to client server time frame. You're talking about, you know, when you started, you were talking about installing software. Remember the days when you would buy, you know, Lotus 1-2-3 to be 37 disks to, you know, to install one at a time because, you know, there wasn't SaaS. But that's where I got my start. And then I worked for a company called Ariba out of Silicon Valley. And we were in the e-commerce space. And then I did a couple other startups after that. And when I was in the exit of my last startup, it was around third-party management. And, you know, I kind of had this idea started percolating on the fact that we had spent a lot of money on our Salesforce and marketing automation and SEO and websites and and all this technology to make our sales and marketing more efficient. But the demo process was exactly the same as when I joined Ariba in 1997 as a pre-sales engineer. So after I exited that business and sold it off to private equity and kind of started looking at other things, I had this idea that there has to be a way that you can augment, not replace, but augment the demo process today with some modern technology. So that's what we did. And that's what we do.
Wow. So were you, when you started this business, were you kind of already successful or did you have to ease into it? Were you working? Like what was the process at the point where you were like, okay, this thing that I'm building is getting successful and I don't have to worry as much anymore. Like what was that transition like for you?
Well, that thing never happens, right? So I'm always worried. I'm always paranoid. I'm always, there's always tomorrow. But, as Bezos says at Amazon, but think about it, your startup is day two. And if you're always paranoid, you'll continue to do well. But no, I was fortunate enough in my last business to have a positive exit. And so when I, kind of thought about what am I going to do next, I kind of looked at a lot, fortunate to look at different options, but really was passionate about this idea, of the demo. And I've told this story before. One of the kind of, the perfect storm was my children, my boys came home from college at Thanksgiving and they said, Dad, we have these online classes. They're 90 minutes long. They're 14 weeks. And we want to go back and like study a week, but we can't. And of course, my ears perked up when my kids are telling me they want to study, right? When kind of as a father, that's what I wanted to hear. But it was video recording, and they're like, "Well, how will we go back to the week that the teacher talked about gross margin calculation?" And I'm like, "Well, just search." I'm like, "Well, Dad, you can't do that. You can't search video. There's no way to do that." And the light bulb went off between that and my previous experience and some consulting work I was doing. And I said, "Gosh, if we could figure out a way to make the insides of a video searchable, so that someone could ask a question, like kind of have a conversation, and would find the right video in the right section, boy, that would go a long way in removing a lot of this buyer friction." So I bootstrapped it. The first thing I did was hire some college students to kind of tell me whether it could technologically be done. Since no one had done it before, I didn't know, right? I didn't know if it was because it was a bad idea or was it because technologically, it was hard. And I think, a perfect storm, the cloud infrastructure, you can now get your hands on, millions of dollars of technology infrastructure for a monthly fee. So that gave me a leg up and be able to go and use the cloud to do all these transcriptions. And these, graduate computer science students came back and said, "Yeah, it can be done." And they showed me, it was a rude prototype, but it was a prototype in which, we were able to search, to take a video, index it, make it searchable, and literally talk and have a conversation with, with the video. So that was the beginning of this, and we bootstrapped it. And then, from that point forward, it's just customers, right, continue to help us grow.
So basically, you're taking libraries of video content, and you're making a search database from that content without having to go in and individually label all the videos. Am I getting that right? Can you just kind of clarify on that?
Yeah. So what we do is think of a 30 minute or 60 minute sales presentation that you record, or a 60 minute demo that you've done. You upload that into our platform. The platform transcribes the audio so that it makes it searchable. Every single solitary word, phrase is searchable. And then we layer on top of that what's called natural language processing so that it's much more friendly from a conversation, from a search perspective. But you're exactly right. We have one client that has 320 videos that they've uploaded, and you can ask whatever question you want. It finds the right video or videos, and it finds the exact moment in the video where that prospect is talking about reporting or workflow or, differentiation or, integration, whatever the topic, may be. And then the prospects can ask a question. They can, look by topic and consume, right, that video, because we're kind of all impatient today and we don't watch 60 minutes of anything. We, you know, the average watch time on YouTube is 2 minutes and 37 seconds. So our attention span is quick, and people are you know, your buyers are now people. They want the information quickly. They want it now. So this gives them the ability to get to the information easily, find the right information, consume it in a way that they want to. Video is predominantly the best medium for people to remember and retain information. So it kind of mixes all those great things together and provides that experience. But we do, you know, the engine does the heavy lifting, because today you can search YouTube for videos, but it's only the title and the tags, right? It's not the internal guts of the artist. That's the big difference.
So because I could see functionality for this that could go to a wide different range of potential clients. Who are you focused on right now? Are you focused on enterprise level companies, or what's your primary target market at this time?
Yeah. So we are focused. You're exactly right. I mean, you not just software, right? You can look at, you know, we've been pinged a lot in hospitality or in medical devices or in pharmaceutical, right? Because anywhere that a buyer needs to learn about a product, this is applicable. But in the software area, the SaaS software market, we really have focused in on companies that sell to the SMB market. So we don't care how big the company is we sell to. They could be, you know, we've got a prospect right now that's a $1 billion company, but they sell to small businesses like gyms and doctor's offices and yoga studios and doctor and orthodontists and florists and garages. So when you're selling a software product to a small local business, and there's, you know, only about 8 million of those in the United States, you can't have a high cost to sell, because typically your product is only a couple $100 or $1,000 a month. So that's been a really sweet spot for us, because businesses can now kind of automate the top of the funnel demo process. And we've got customers that are only $1 million in revenue. We've got customers that are up to 100 and some odd, you know, in revenue. So that's where we're starting right now, is really focused on, you know, on helping those businesses, because their cost of sale is exorbitant.
I guess what is really interesting to me is I get trapped on the underlying technology a bit, because that technology is really powerful. And I see like other potential applications of it, just from when you talk about it. Like, have you considered taking on people that have web shows, or even the idea of like taking on a podcast where you have these, you know, hours and hours of content, and people might want to sift through specific questions? But it seems like the software that you have could be applied to a number of different markets. Have you looked at taking this to different verticals beyond just SaaS? Because again, the underlying technology is very interesting to me. And then we can come back to the SaaS topic some more here.
Yeah, the answer is of course, right? I've done 5 different startups, and I think the key is you got to focus, right? So if I said yes to everybody, then, you know, every market you're talking about may need another 10 or 15 different features to really make it work for them. And then, you know, multiply that by 10 markets. Now you've got, you know, a product roadmap that's large. But we do, right? We talked to someone the other day. They're already a customer. The HR VP called me and said, listen, when I interview people, it would be helpful if I could record that, and then I could circulate that to my managers, and they could search and find out, you know, the answer to the question around development, or, you know, how do you, what's your leadership skills, et cetera. You know, we like I said, we have an entrepreneur now that uses us, has 380 videos. They're kind of in the leadership mentor space, nothing to do with software at all whatsoever, but they have a lot to say. They have a lot of information. Intermixed in that catalog is podcasts. They do podcasts, and it's, you know, we just put it up as an MP4, no video per se, but they are able to search, you know, what's the key to leadership or mentorship, or, you know, all these different topics this gentleman talks about. So, you know, I 100% you're on the right track. We, right, as you know, as I like to say, as mammals, right, want to consume, you know, information in a video audio way. It gives us a much better, we can do it while we're driving. We can listen to things while we're working out. Like, that's what makes your podcast so great, is I can listen to them in the morning. I can listen to them when I'm driving. If it was a document you sent me, I can only do it when I'm sitting and able to read. And after probably 10 minutes, I'm moving on, right? I just don't have the bandwidth, and I want to find my information quick. But we're focused right now on the software space. We've had calls from higher ed We've had calls, like I said, from even bankers. Bankers are saying, hey, we put a lot of stuff in these sales and acquisition rooms. Gosh, it sure would be great to search that data, right? So, you know, lots of uses.
So let me ask you, the platform that you built, does it do you have to manually put in like the dialogue, or do you have some sort of algorithm that scans the dialogue and turns it into text that can then be queried? Like what's the methodology? If I were to upload something to your system, how does it output in a way that I can do like a semantic search with it?
Yeah, so let's take this conversation. Let's pretend you're recording me as well as listening to me. We would upload.
We're not recording you. We're not recording you, just so you know. Yeah.
Okay, all right, good. I can say whatever I want then. Hey, so if you were to do that, we upload that. What we do is we break apart the audio and the video track, and we transcribe, right, the audio into text so that it becomes searchable. You don't need to do anything. We do it, right? The platform automatically makes that available, and then the UI, and then we, like I said, but then we layer the natural language processing in there for plurals and synonyms and context, right? Like, let me give you an example. If you were demoing a software, you would normally say, this is how our software is priced. No one would ever ask that question. You wouldn't say, hey, how do you price your software? You'd say, how much does it cost, right? So the NLP allows that context of that human nature of how questions are asked automatically. So it really does all the legwork and then breaks up all the phrases so people can browse, by phrase as well. And it makes it searchable.
So is the transcription done manually, or is that done?
No, automatically. Yeah. We have different services.
Oh, wow.
We send it out to different services, different machine learning that we've written. And we're about 98.something% accurate. You know, occasionally you'll find words that aren't human words, like homonym wouldn't be translated because it's not a word, right? But we have a synonym database that a dictionary database that customers can add their uniqueness to, and then it would automatically be able to transcribe homonym, right? Because that's just not a word in the language, it's made up.
Got it. So you have this platform. My next question is, as far as like the marketing aspect goes, what do you do to market your technology to on a business to business level? Like, how do you do your sales cycle for a particular business that may be interested in this?
Yeah. So what we're looking for, right, is there's a statistic that most software companies, the percentage is about 96-97% of software companies have what's called a request a demo button on their website. I'm sure, you two have both seen it, where there's, you want to go look at some software and you've read all the copy and now you want to see, you click on a request demo button and up pops a form. Well, the bounce rate, the abandonment rate of that form is 85% across the industry. 9 out of 10 people that get that form will just reject it and will not fill it out. They don't want to engage with a sales rep at that point in time. So what we're doing is we're going and talking to companies that have a request a demo button in the market segment that I said, which is, hey, we know that their product is used by the SMB market, et cetera. And we're marketing old fashioned way, right? We're using webinars, we're using emails, we're using, kind of sales methods, and we're using cold calling. I do a lot of calling. The good news about it is when you get a customer, they get great results, right? Because now all of a sudden that bounce rate goes to zero. Their dwell time from a marketing perspective goes way up. They're getting more opportunities. Sales is using it, et cetera. And that leads to references. That leads to, them going and telling their peers, hey, you got to check this new technology out. It's pretty cool, right? So there's a viral effect, that we get. And here's the second cool thing is that when a customer goes live, right, the powered by Omnidim, right, is on the demo. So when a prospect goes to a website and doesn't see the request a demo, they see start your demo, whatever button the customer's using, and they click on it. And all of a sudden now they're in this live demo environment where they can ask questions and have a conversation. They typically will say, wow, this is pretty cool. We should be using this. So there's a viral effect, in both of those scenarios where peers as well as users will go, wow, how come we're not doing this? We don't have this on our website. So, we take advantage of that and capitalize on that activity.
So have you seen anyone else who does anything like this? Anyone else in this space that has this type of product?
No, there's two companies that we're aware of that do something similar. One is in the higher ed space, so they're selling to universities, which I think is a great idea for, you know, students to learn and be able to, like my boys want to do, to be able to study. And the second use we've seen is in the legal space. So today, if your lawyer wants to review a court, they have to read the transcript. And of course, you could turn that into audio, but now they're being able to record the actual witness, and they're able to, you know, kind of search and say, when did he talk about DNA? I'm just making that up. And apparently, I did a little bit of research to understand this, but apparently that obviously how the witness says it and what their facial expressions are on their body language is very important to a lawyer, you know, kind of reviewing the testimony, much more meaningful than just reading the black and white transcript. So those are the two, you know, we're seeing two companies that are kind of in that space. Obviously, there's lots of companies that are in the video analysis space, a lot trying to do for medical, right, find cancer, view commercials and those kind of things where they're actually looking at the images within the videos. But we haven't seen anyone do specifically, you know, what we're doing. And I think that there will be, but I think, you know, the end of the day is the company that can execute the best and wrap, right, the best services around this technology will win. There's lots of companies that are out there trying to do, you know, sales enablement, but we're few in the buyer enablement space.
It matters to be first to market too. I mean, I think that's important also. So tell me a little bit about this. I want to know when, like, for example, let's say you have that, you have your demo button, start your demo instantly on somebody's website, and a client clicks on it. So what is that automated experience like exactly? So when they click on start their demo now, are they typing questions into like a into kind of to a bot, and then the bot is spitting back clips of video that'll address those questions with video demos? Or can you explain that a little bit to me? I just want to get a fuller sense of how the demo process occurs and how it's being fully automated and replacing the one-on-one conversations that traditionally were happening for SaaS model.
Yeah. So I think that we're more of an augmentation than a replacement. What we're trying to do is automate the beginning, the top of the funnel on the marketing side, right, where the face-to-face is not happening, right? 85% of people bounce. Yeah. They don't actually get a demo. But think about, you click on a button, like you come to a player that's very much like a YouTube interface where you have a video player with a screen, and the prospect, the buyer, if you will, has three different paths. Number one, they can type, just like Google, does your software do parallel workflow? How does it do analytics? And that when they type in that question, the search results will show them, hey, here's a video, you know, at the 11 minute and 10 second mark. Here's a video number two that was a webinar. Here's a video number three that was a sales deck. And it will show them exactly, they can click on those just like they would their Google results. And the player will start playing at that moment. They watch it, they consume it, and they go to the next one. They can also look at topics, as I said. So when we transcribe that video, we also provide the top 25 to 50 quote-unquote phrases. So some buyers are not necessarily wanting to ask a question as much as they want to know, oh, I see parallel workflow here. I see the word, you know, reporting analytics, or I see, you know, governance, compliance, and they click on that, and that will then give them a list of the content that is covering that particular phrase. So we call that browsing. They want to kind of browse through the topics as opposed to a search. And then we see that if those that browse, once they watch a little bit of content, then start asking questions. So it's pretty cool how people, like, they want to peel back the onion and dig in. And the last method for a prospect is we give our customers, right, the ability to create what's called recommended questions. So, you know, Justin, you went to the website, you clicked on the button, you're presented with this UI, and you see there's a list of kind of like a GPS, a list of recommended questions. You know, who is Amadim? What's Amadim's value prop? What does Amadim look like? And you click on those as a new visitor, and you get that experience as well. So kind of all three methods. And then what we do for our customers is, all that activity is stored in the database. So I know what my buyer intent was, what my buyer's interest is. Well, they're interested in workflow. They're interested in integration. They're interested an integration to Salesforce. Wow. So now I know a lot more about my buyer because I'm gathering that activity for my customers so they understand what videos, what questions, how long, when, which is a pretty interesting fun fact. We've given tens of thousands of these demos. 42% of all of our customers' demos are given before 9 a.m. and after 6 a.m. on weekends, which means that buyers aren't necessarily, quote unquote, buying during the day. They're busy. They have a day job, especially if you're a small business. You're a doctor, a dentist, a gym owner. You don't have any time at all during the day. You're doing your, quote unquote, research early mornings, late nights. So that's a, you know, we give that data back to our customers so they can understand more about the buyer intent, the buyer kind of activity. So it's very valuable to the marketing and sales organization. Yeah.
That's interesting because, so you're filling in the gap. So like if somebody wasn't quite ready for a demo, you are kind of handling their objections up front. You're giving them the commonly asked questions. You're filling in those gaps for them. What I also like is that you're also collecting marketing data. I mean, you're learning about your client base, your potential client base, and you could then turn around and use that as a SaaS company in your advertising, which is, so there's like there's a secondary benefit right there. That's pretty cool.
That's huge, right? Because you're doing SEO based on what people will search for on Google. But once they get into your product, to know someone who's really interested in integration, and the other thing that's really important is every time someone asks a question that isn't answered, the content curator at the customer gets an alert, right? Because what's kind of cool is someone came to your website. Let's just pretend they asked about, hey, you integrate with Salesforce Group Edition. And suppose you had no content on that. Well, now, the very next day or within an hour, someone can go create content that talks about your integration with that particular version of Salesforce. So knowing what your prospects ask and what you've answered, it's pretty important and it's very valuable to know, hey, what are my prospects asking that I didn't provide content for? That's keeping them on your website, right? Keeping that dwell time. Because as people, you and I, we go someplace, we ask a couple of questions. If we don't get our answers, we leave and go someplace else, right? That's just what we do.
So is the content, once it's created in a semantic way so it can be searchable, is that walled garden content, or do you make that also available to search engines so it can be like those queries can be found with a normal Google search?
No, it's not. It's sitting in our database. We do have roadmap plans to actually make that transcript SEO enabled so that it will, when you do search on Google and you find that phrase, it can direct you back to the customer's version of our software. But no, right now we don't kind of open it up to the YouTube world, so to speak.
Okay. Got it. You know, it's kind of interesting because, I was doing some SEO with YouTube. I'm a video SEO person. I really understand how that works, in some ways better than a lot of people. However, there was a short time when, YouTube actually allowed the content that was spoken within YouTube to be SEO activated, right? So you could actually search for it. So they did have that because they analyzed the audio of every single video that gets posted. And I heard from a secondhand source that it's so messed up the Google algorithm with search results because of all the dialogue that was being then SEO'd that they had to disconnect that service. Do you know anything about that? Number one. And number two, have you thought about if Google started implementing something like that, what you would do about that? Because it sounds like it would kind of kill your business in some manner, wouldn't it?
No, not at all. I mean, so I think YouTube is not in any way, shape, or form a competitor of ours because we're kind of providing that buyer experience, this notion of guided selling all around, right? The prospect that comes, they can consume that content. We have integration with chat so they can literally have a live conversation right that minute with the salesperson, you know, storing that activity we just talked about, the recommended questions, the journeys, right? All the way through the customer journey from sales to support. YouTube, right? It, you know, first and foremost, you watch a video and then you watch your competitor's video. So it's really not advantageous for a business, you know, to be up on YouTube. And my understanding, and I don't know that this will or will not change, is that one of the reasons why Google did what it did as far as the search and the transcription is YouTube makes money for you listening to minutes of video because advertisements play, right? After you watch any video for more than 3 minutes, it'll say advertisement coming up, right? So for them to be able to provide a way for you to shortcut, kind of like a DVR, and not have to, you know, watch for a long time is actually, you know, against their business model, right? It doesn't make sense for their business model.
Yeah. So
I don't see them doing it right away. And I'm not, if they did, it really wouldn't bother us because what we're seeing our customers do is kind of wrap this, you know, kind of experience around the technology. The technology is great. Others will have it, but, you know, how do you enable that buyer to buy? You know, it's kind of like CRM is everywhere, right? How many players are there in CRM? But, you know, kind of Salesforce does a really good job, you know, wrapping a whole bunch of stuff around that CRM world and, you know, therefore dominates the market.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what is the sales process for your clients when someone comes to you? Do you have a demo of your demo on your website? Like,
yeah.
How does that work? Like, give me the sales process for your team.
Yeah, so that's what we get, you know, the vast majority of our leads is whatever marketing we're doing. They come to our website. On our website, it says start your demo. There's no requested demo. They click on it, and there's all our content, wide open. No gating, no fill out a form, no nothing. Ask whatever question you want, and we'll answer it. And if we don't, we'll create new content and answer it tomorrow. And then at a certain point in time, the customer will register. They'll raise their hand and say, hey, I really like what I'm seeing. I want to talk to someone at Amadim. And typically what we'll do is if they already have some content or if they've got, you know, a couple videos on YouTube, we'll actually build them a quick portal. It takes about an hour for us to kind of do what I'm talking about here. And then they can see their own stuff and they can ask their own questions of their own tech, you know, their own software. And that's usually what closes the deal because they see what we have, and you know, people are skeptical. Well, of course it works for you, Greg. It's your technology. You probably put metadata in there to really make it work really well. Could you take, you know, if we did a demo right now of our software on Zoom, would you record it, upload it, and let me see it? Yeah, I'll do that. Let's do that right now, as a matter of fact. Do a half hour demo. I'll upload it to Zoom. 20 minutes from now, it'll be processed. Here it is, play it to your heart's content. And that usually, they usually are blown away by the fact that within, you know, 20 minutes, I implemented a whole freaking, you know, a demo for them.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I think is kind of fascinating about the path that you took is that it sounds like you're a salesman at heart, right? Like that's kind of the first hat that you wear. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I started off in pre-sales at Ariba and ended up running all of pre-sales, and I ran our marketplace business, and I ended up, you know, running North American sales. So I believe that my software and the other five startups that I've done were very valuable to customers, and it's my job to help them understand that. It's not really, you know, it's a great job to have when you're helping other businesses with ROI or whatever, but I love sales. I love meeting people, and talking's not a problem for me.
So you took kind of your ability to be a salesman plus your love of tech, and that's kind of the outcome. This is the child of the marriage of those particular aspects. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you really think of the you know where we are today, the statistics are now confirmed that a buyer only spends 5% of their time with the vendor, 5% of their buying time with the vendor. The rest of the time is on their own, inside their team, consensus building, getting validation. The second statistic is that 77% of all buyers, when polled, said the buying process is frustrating and complex and hard. And the reason is because we as software companies have spent an inordinate amount of billions of dollars on us, on our sales process, on our salespeople, on our marketing, on, you know, on MarTech and sales tech, and no one's really thought about the buyer equation. So what I said was there has to be a way for the for that for the sales and marketing departments to be augmented with what I call a digital strategy, so that your buyer, you know, let's do a digital buyer enablement strategy, because I really think that buyers, if you're looking to solve a problem, will want to talk to sales, but not necessarily in the order in which sales wants to talk to you. And so let's augment some of those steps with some automated content, some automated demos, so that your buyer is less friction in that process. And you know, this has been played out in great examples. Look at Uber, right? So the yellow cab in California and New York is the exact same product that Uber has. It's a ride from point A to point B. Uber made the buying experience much easier. They won the market. Look at Netflix. It's the same movie as Blockbuster. Exactly the same. The buying experience is much better with Netflix. So my kind of thinking was, where that world is existing, the metrics are supporting it. How do we make salespeople more productive, marketing people more productive, and help that buyer in their pursuit of trying to buy solutions that make their jobs, their life better? And that's all I'm trying to do. It's not a replacement strategy. It's more of an augmentation of providing a digital channel.
Now, I have a question for you, because this ties into your SaaS model, but it also ties into other businesses. And it's kind of a general question about sales process in general. I do feel like buyers are demanding a higher level of transparency these days than ever in the past. And a lot of that is because of the internet and the access to information. Now, yeah. Some companies, including SaaS companies, some companies like to hide their prices. And I wanted to hear before the demo, anyway, they want to hide their prices until a sales rep can sit down with a client and then kind of explain them before they see the prices. I wanted to hear your philosophy about that. If you believe that the prices for a SaaS product should always be easily accessible, or in terms of other businesses too, just in general as a sales process, because I know there's a ton of service companies out there that would never reveal their prices until you've talked to a sales agent. So this is kind of a general question about the sales process in the modern era, but I'd like to hear your feedback on it.
Yeah, I think that there's a time and a place for everything, right? So there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, as we get more mature and as a company, and as we get, you know, better data on where the price break should be, our pricing will be 100% transparent. And I believe that that's the right direction to go for, you know, for companies to have a very discreet line and for people to be able to comprehend and understand it instantaneously. Like, I can understand Zoom, Slack, Expensify's pricing very, very easily, but there are still, right, some businesses in which that's not the case, right? It's kind of like the transition from, you know, you start off by talking about SaaS, you know, 1999, 2000, when Salesforce kind of invented it. Everyone wanted to go to the subscription model and sales, you know, in SaaS overnight, it didn't happen, right? You had to get your company and your product in line to order to leverage and capitalize on a subscription SaaS model. I think pricing is the same way, right? There are some businesses that are very complex. It's not just as simple as user base. There's all kinds of other variables that, you know, that hold it here. But I also believe, right, that you're hitting on something, that transparency idea. I think that some companies are waking up to the fact that their processes, like keeping all the content on a website gated, in order way, only way we'll do a demo or give you certain content is if you give us your email address. The buyers are rejecting that. They're going someplace else. So you're actually hurting your company by demanding that. And I think the same thing holds true. If you were on someone's website and you said, hey, listen, I've researched your stuff. I just want to get an idea, a ballpark of my pricing. And the response is, yeah, as soon as you talk to so-and-so, I'll give you that. I think they're hurting themselves, because as you said, it's really interesting that sellers have leveraged the you-know-what out of the internet, several ways from Sunday, to get all kinds of information about buyers. And don't you think for a second, sellers have the same internet. They have the same ability to learn about you and gain information. So if they're asking for pricing, don't hold it hostage. If they want a demo, don't hold it hostage. If they want content, you're hurting yourself by thinking that if I hold this thing out, someone's going to give me the data I want, and then I'll give them the demo or the pricing. No, better go someplace else. The average business today has 13 competitors compared to 3 10 years ago. There's options out there. They will move.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, whenever I'm looking for a price on something, and if I hit a website that's like, contact us for more information, I'm like, no, I'm going to take that time to go look at, you know, your competitor to find out if they give me the price, and then I'll know, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, yeah, so I think that that is definitely, in fact, anybody out there who is doing that, who's like, has the contact us for price, stop doing that, please.
Well, that's what he said. The augmentation comes in there. Having the augmentation to be able to search and get more information, to create that, to create the gateway to that conversation, I think is important. Now, Greg, I wanted to get back to one question, which is you talked about the bounce rate of a traditional demo opt-in form. Now, when you use your software in place of that traditional opt-in form, now not only the bounce rate, but what kind of increases in sales and what kind of increases in demos that are getting performed are you seeing overall?
Yeah, so the usage is through the roof, right? So first of all, most our customers, I'm not saying we're bounce free, right? But you take that 85% goes down to about 10, right? So most people, you know, will once they hit that and they understand that it's a whole new world, they can actually get their questions answered. The bounce rate is very low. Dwell time in most of our customers is up between 400 and 600% because people are staying there and consuming a lot more information than they were in the past. The without mentioning names, two of our customers came back with a statistic that said that 25% of all of the prospects that took an online autonomous demo on demand demo actually came back and signed up for called sales and said, hey, we want to move forward, right? We want to engage with you. So that's a pretty, you know, great statistic in showing that, you know, business is moving through the pipeline because you're enabling, right, that buyer to buy. And I think the you know, same thing with the inside sales use case where, you know, if I'm on the phone with you and you like what you're hearing, within 2 minutes, you're going to say, hey, can I see the product? And most inside sales people are like, okay, I'll have to get you this, and we'll have to schedule this, and we'll have to schedule that. And the ability to get that meeting is normally about 10-15%. With our software, the inside sales can say, hey, Jason, I can give you a demo right now. Are you on your computer? Boom, here's our new technology we use to allow you. Let me walk you through really quickly what you can do, and then I'll follow up with you in 3 or 4 days to see if you have any more questions. Boom. So both parties are happy because let's face it, right? You didn't hire inside sales to give demos. You hired them to prospect. They're not really good at it, right? No offense, but that's not their skill set. So we see all those metrics are moving in the right direction for our customers, thankfully.
Nice. So, with the dawning of AI, where do you see this kind of going? Because one of the things that I find very interesting with the way that AI is working, especially with these companies like Google and Facebook, who know more about you than your spouse or your therapist ever will. How do you see this, your type of technology and future technologies going and with AI?
Yeah. So I think the stat I gave you a moment ago about, you know, the buyers only spend 5% of their time with the seller, the rest of it on their own, is really what that really says is the following. Buyers are no longer dependent, they're independent. And, you know, whatever you were buying 20 years ago, if you wanted to know anything about a car, a vacation, a cruise, you know, a hotel, a piece of software, you had to call and you had to ask, hey, does the car do this? Does it have this safety feature? Can it put a child seat in the back? Does it have a hatch? Does it have a windshield wiper on the back? I mean, all that, you had to go to a salesperson and ask them those questions. That's not the case anymore. So what I see AI and machine learning doing is continuing this move where sales is more helping you buy and sales is more about a guided selling process. And AI, kind of like our technology, I'm not saying it's AI, but our technology is more of an augmentation to the salesperson. It connects with that digital buyer when you're not talking to me. It allows that digital buyer to continue to get information. Think of a great use case of today. If you and I did a demo of our software, and 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, you're with your buying team and you're deciding which product you're going to buy. gosh, do you really remember 4 weeks ago when you got the demo? Are you confused between product A and product B? Without our technology, how the heck do you answer those questions? You kind of sit in the room and go, well, I think that software did that. Well, maybe it was that software did that. You're not really sure. With ours, you just open up the UI and see, ask the question, right? Get the demo right that second. So I think what we're finding is that's where the market's going to continue to go. AI is going to continue to help sales guide the buyer, right? And provide that buyer with a pleasant buying experience. I don't think it, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think it automatically, people do want to talk to a salesperson when it's the right time. And I don't think AI is going to automatically, you know, lay off 40 million salespeople. I think it's going to help salespeople. There'll be less of them, right? Because they're more efficient, they're more effective, they're more productive because of these tools. But I think that's where things, you know, come up. You still go to a car dealer to buy a car. Well, that's not true. You go to Carvana and have it delivered. But, you know, that's, again, the information is there for you to get what you need in that particular case. So that's where I see it going.
Well, a lot more qualified conversations and a lot less conversations with people that are only haphazardly interested. So yeah. I think, yeah, machine learning is going to just make it'll make it seamless. So you're only having conversations with the people that are, you know, one step away from either buying or not buying.
Yeah.
Now, do you, with this business, you mentioned that you've been kind of a serial entrepreneur throughout your history. Now, do you anticipate that at some point, as this hits like a certain growth threshold, that you might look into that underlying technology and applying it to a different vertical? Or do you feel like after you've kind of developed this company, you might just go in an entirely different direction? Or what do you see as the future beyond that?
No, so strategy A is right now we're focused on the demo, right? On the sales aspect, sales and marketing aspect. We're quickly adding implementation and customer success. So think of that, you know, think of the practicality of you bought software and now you're implementing it. You got a whole bunch of how-to questions, right? So now instead of having to call up the consultant, you can ask our software. And then last, think of support, right? This is really where we think a lot of gold will be in those hills. And the fact that you are using a piece of software and you can't get the report to work the way you thought it would, you know, 68% of all help desk tickets are how-to questions, right? Hey, can you help me do this? Because yeah. They don't want to call a consultant. They go to the help desk. As a help desk person, you're not going to say no to a customer. So how about in the future, instead of that, you just ask the software, how do I do this? And it shows you immediately how to do it. So now you actually get, you know, instead of having to put the gas drill together with a set of instructions, there's a video with helping you along the way. So onboarding the prospect, implementation, onboarding, customer success and support, that's strategy A. And then strategy B, so if that's a kind of a, you know, a horizontal line, then it's vertical. And we got software today, but industry 2, industry 3, industry 4, industry 5 will follow that in that matrix. And we've already been asked by, you know, kind of people in that industry to say, let's say hospitality as an example. Hey, could we OEM your technology and embed it in what we're doing? Because we already sell to a boatload of hotels and people tend to want to not just ask, do you have a pool? They actually want to see the pool. They want to see a video of the pool, not a still picture. And hey, do you have that swim up bar at your pool? And what does the beach look like? And could you walk me through the restaurants and the amenities? There's an experience where people can just ask questions and get to the video to understand maybe you guys are really interested in the bar. I'm really interested in the golf course. I don't want to sit through a 45-minute video. And fast forward and rewind doesn't help me, but search does, right? Search allows me to get the information, check out the golf course, check out the bar, and move on, right? And so I see that's our vision for how we're going to go about, you know, kind of building our business.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. I mean, it's kind of a sneak peek into the future of sales and customer service management. Lots of cool things coming down the pipeline. And then your technology is just one aspect. I mean, with like you mentioned earlier, machine learning, we're going to see more augmented reality, maybe more virtual reality all coming into play as well. So lots of exciting stuff coming. I think that those are my questions, though. Andros, what do you got?
It's all pretty clear for me, and it's really what I think is interesting, because I've been a salesperson first and foremost as well, and that's what got me into marketing, is this idea of using technology to kind of help the sales process as a salesperson. And I think that it's we're definitely going to see a lot more of that. So this is all very fascinating. And I would like to see a vertical where we can upload, say, a podcast, and then people can ask questions like, how does this dumb podcast work? And then this pops up and, that's because I still want to know the answer to that.
Going back to what you said earlier about Google is just, that's kind of a funny conversation too, though, because it's like Google wants to improve their technology to a certain extent, but not to disrupt their advertising and revenue generation methods. So that's a fun topic to explore. Yeah. But you're right, because if you could search video content and only find the parts that you wanted to find, you wouldn't have to watch the whole video. You could spend less time on the platform. That's bad for business. Plus, they could still insert an ad here and there, but if less time you spend on the platform, that's bad for business. So ultimately, technology wants to evolve so far, but then they want to keep things stagnant in some levels too.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because when I worked for Comcast, they kept saying that they were very interested in improving the network, and that's why they raised their prices. I got to tell you, Comcast was a company that did everything in their power to stop innovation from happening. So, one proposal I saw, which I think is absolutely brilliant, is that Google should spin off their search business and just keep it an open source platform that is simply managed, and that way they're not in it for their own self-interest. But we're in a really unpredictable and strange time, so I wish you lots of luck with this, Greg, and thank you so much for being on the show. But before we go, I gotta know, we're marketing geeks because we're geeky about not just marketing but all a number of things. So Greg, what are you geeky about this week? Doesn't have to be marketing related. Could be a TV show, movie, music, book. What are you most geeky about right at this moment?
Well, it's going to sound really weird, but I've been in the software business for all my life, and my hobby is I do woodworking. So it's a way I can escape from this constant consumption of marketing and sales and product management and technology. And right now what I've been geeking over is I'm getting ready to buy a sawmill. So it's been consuming me at night instead of doing what I'm supposed to be doing, which is reading about technology. I've been watching and learning about sawmills and which one I should buy. So I'm just being honest. That's what I'm geeking about right now. I'm going to start making my own wood for furniture.
We all have our own meditative processes, and we all have our own way of calming down. Now, where can we find you, Greg? Can you, for our listeners, can you share your website, where they can find you, how they contact you, all that information?
Yeah, certainly. So thanks for asking. So again, it's Omedym, think my demo backwards. So omedym.com. We're wide open. We're wide open book. Take a demo, take a tour. Hey, leave us a note, right? We want to know how we're doing. We want to know how you'll get some feedback. And you can find me at Greg Dickinson on LinkedIn as well. Love to have a conversation and chat where, this stuff's evolving every day. And, because of people like yourselves that are listeners, are helping us go in the right direction. So please reach out.
Awesome. And we'll put all that in the show notes to make it easy.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. Justin, what are you geeky about this week?
Man, I just watched the Great Hack on Netflix, which was pretty interesting. It's all about data. They go pretty heavy into the Cambridge Analytica story and just about the future of data collection methods. It goes heavily into like the UK side because they had in the UK, they had stricter privacy guidelines. So actually laws were officially broken in the UK. So it's a pretty interesting movie. It's a little bit one-sided as far as anti Facebook, anti tech, which is kind of to be expected. But it's an eye opening. So it's worth checking out, I think, at the very least. So it's called The Great Hack. It's on Netflix right now.
Oh, cool. I'll check that out. You guys are going to laugh, but on Netflix, they did a reboot of She-Ra, Princess of Power.
I remember She-Ra.
Yeah.
and He-Man, I have to say, it's been off of He-Man, right? Yeah.
There's no He-Man. It's She-Ra, Princess of Power. And my 4-year-old son, who he loves the color pink, and he loves power, like people with swords and portals and princesses and unicorns. It's got all of that stuff in there. And I gotta say, the show is actually very well done, and it's definitely geared towards 13-year-old girls, but it's a It's a good. I gotta say, it's suckered me in. It's a good show. They're on the third season now. I really like it. I hate to admit it, but I like. Well,
She-Ra Princess my 1-year-old loves Frozen and listening, watching like the Let It Go songs. I'm sure he'll love She-Ra.
You poor bastard. Yeah. You poor bastard. I would say get him involved to get it before it's too late. Get him involved with Steven Universe and of course Adventure Time. Yeah. You know.
To this day, I can still sing songs that my kids listened to when they were young in the car on road trips. I just heard, play it again, like for 3 hours. This is a Sesame Seed counting, right? Just be like they were so into it. I can still sing those songs. Like, oh my gosh, it's enabled. So good luck with that. Getting that out of your head after your month.
Yep, I'm my brain is being imprinted with those songs as we speak.
Well, so with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for another fabulous episode of the Marketing Geeks. Thank you, Greg, for coming here. Please check out his website. If you have a software company or something that you need to demo, it sounds like this is a really good solution. Also, just, you know, as mentioned, ping him on LinkedIn. That's I'm going to go do that right now. I'm going to send you a friend request on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and ping us, the Marketing Geeks, on LinkedIn as well. And if you're a fan of the show, there's a new feature. So we host on Anchor.fm. We've mentioned it in our previous episodes. If you listen to the show on Anchor, so I believe it's Anchor.fm/Marketing-Geeks, you can actually leave us a voicemail. You can record a voicemail through the platform on mobile or desktop now, and we can play it on future episodes of the show. So we want to hear from you, the listeners. Go to anchor.fm/marketing-geeks and leave us a voicemail. Do it.
Yeah, you could send us love. You could talk shit. Doesn't matter.
No, we don't care. We don't care.
Well, whatever. We just want someone to talk to us, you know? We love it. So lots of great new episodes coming up. Season 2 is starting to roll out. So thank you, everyone, for your loyalty. And with that,
stay classy.